Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Maybe you recall the teen advice columnist of your girlhood. For 30 years, Carol Weston has filled the bill for Girls Life magazine, responding to every conceivable query with a dollop of reality mixed with a dash of empathy and varying degrees of direction. Her new tween novel is fiction, of course, but based on her own experience as an advice guru to girls ages 9 to 15. The book is entitled The Speed of Life. Welcome to the show, Carol Weston.
So good to be here. Thank you.
A key to the advice columnist thing is that someone is asking you for advice. And that's a lot of leverage coming from that demographic.
It is. I feel it's a lot of leverage, responsibility, privilege. I take it very seriously. I think for about 20 years, I could literally say that I'd answered every single letter I got. And then at some point I thought, oh my goodness, I've got to, you know, if someone says, I like him so much, how can I show him that I like him? Or how can I tell him that I like him? I thought, I'm not going to answer every letter. But I probably answered 30,000 letters. It's what I seem to do.
What interests you? What gets you to answer a letter? What sparks your imagination or your interest?
I think the fact that as a sensitive, sensible adult, I can, in mere minutes, really help out a kid who's feeling so confused or hurt or anguished. And needless to say, some of the letters take a lot more time on my part. But often, some girls just feels terrible because she's a late bloomer or because she has bloomed and her 11-year-old friends have not. And it's not too hard for an anonymous grown-up to help her feel better. She might be too embarrassed to talk to her mom, her school nurse. I'm, of course, always pushing girls to find the trusted nearby person to confide in. But I get that sometimes it's just too embarrassing. So if somebody from far away can say, no, you absolutely cannot possibly be pregnant if all you guys did was kiss. And it's reassuring. It's remarkable that I still get that letter. Not as much as someone might have gotten it years ago, but I still get that letter. So I answer because I can be helpful in a hurry.
The themes recur over and over again over the course of 30 years, I have to imagine. How do your responses change over time, though? How does the tenor change?
Ooh, that's an interesting question. Because indeed, the themes are mostly relationship and sort of body issues, and that doesn't change so much. But I guess over the years, the relationship, I mean, you know, I started before there were, I guess maybe there when there were answering machines. Now, because mm-hmm. it's all devices, it's should I give him my text? He hasn't texted back. Or they'll give me a whole screenshot of all the texting that happened and hope I can help analyze. I think over the years, I have continued to say to kids, slow down. Even I remember being in a mad rush to grow up, you know, when I was 8. What was the rush? I don't know. But that's what you feel when you're 8. So I try to tell people to slow down. I think girls are certainly know that they can run for president, perhaps someday become president soon. So I think just I've always encouraged girls, but maybe I can encourage them even more to just really see clear-eyed. Sorry, I've finally come up on what's really changed. Some girls, knowing that they are allowed to do anything, are sometimes too aggressive and, in fact, confrontational. So I sometimes say, you know, hey, just because it sounds like he doesn't want to go out with you, like give that one a rest, look somewhere else. But there are a lot of girls who really want to confront somebody that they disagree with instead of just realizing that the world is not comprised of only 9 people. Like, look, there's 9 other people on the left and 9 others on the right.
And once again, it's just wait, ultimately. Chill your, you know, cool your jets, wait. That kind of a thing.
Right. And I would never tell anybody to be passive. I mean, you know, be active, live your life, but don't think that you've got to get everything done in a big hurry or just because you have a feeling you need to tell the person that you have this feeling, take action on the feeling. You know, it's just kind of, yeah, be mindful. Ooh, I hate that word mindful, but be aware of all the things that are happening just because once you get something started.
My guest is Carol Weston. She's author of the new book, Speed of Life. She's also for 30 years been the advice columnist for Girls Life magazine. If you have a question or comment for Carol Weston, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. If you're a parent, if you're a girl, has a question for Carol Weston about what she does, you're welcome to give us a call. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org or check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. Who are your favorite advice columnists? You wrote a column about Pauline Phillips, Dear Abby, after her death. So, and you said she was your kind of standard bearer. But tell us about that and where you look today.
Well, I guess I still read in the New York Times Sunday magazine. I live in New York City and get that magazine Saturday morning. And I open it right up and I like Philip Galanis's column. It's funny. He went to Yale and I went to Yale. We both lost our fathers early. And I do think that gives you a whole lot of compassion and empathy that you would very happily trade back in to get your dad, you know? I don't think I look elsewhere so much for advice. I trust my own advice now, but I have a friend named Seth who happens to be a shrink. And every so often I say, Dr. Aidenoff, instead of saying Seth. And he knows I'm going to ask him one of those kind of questions.
You consult then. Consult him.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, I have friends who I get the straight shot. But my own dad had said that my head was screwed on straight. And so I felt like I had a lot of common sense early on, way before I realized that that was fairly uncommon. And in my building in New York City, the co-op board had wanted me to be a board member. It's a crazy real estate Manhattan thing. Mm-hmm. But I said, you know, I'm not a realtor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not an architect. I don't want to do this. And they said, no, we need you because sometimes you just need somebody to say, sure, let them in. Or, oh my gosh, no, that would be really troublesome.
A person who knows people and can identify?
Yeah. And a person who's not judgmental and who's open-minded, but who can recognize, you know, a good person. I mean, I think really sometimes it's hard for others. It's so important to know if you're dealing with a good, honest person. And it shouldn't be hard, but I guess we all give off so many signals. Sometimes kids are aware of the signals they're giving off, and sometimes they're not, bringing it back to girls. You know, there are a lot of girls who are looking one way, but inside they're just innocent 14-year-olds. And so I guess I can pride myself on recognizing good people and trying to help other young, if I'm giving advice to girls, trying to help them realize that what they want isn't necessarily the popular hot guy. They want a kind, smart person. Like, let's just start there and keep going. My first book, Girl Talk, All the Stuff Your Sister Never Told You, which is still in print.
Yeah.
But I lived in German Village in 1985 with my husband, Academy alum Rob Ackerman. We got married in 1980. We came to German Village because he had a real job and I was a writer person that was portable. We loved living in German Village and I met a man named Irv Levy and he was commuting to New York City, commuting to HarperCollins, but he was my first editor. And I'd written a lot for 17 and Glamour and Brides, but I wanted to write a book about write what you know. I knew about girls. So it's Columbus's own Irv Levy that got me started, and the Dispatch gave me a really nice review, and I was on my way as a writer.
You said that the letters are never ending. You said earlier you've probably responded to about 30,000. What does that tell you, that the letters are never ending?
That I will be dead and gone and people will still be saying, Dear Carol, there's this guy I really like. And Dear Carol, I wish I could talk to my mom, but I can't. Or I think I need a bra, but I don't know how to broach that subject. Or more sadly, you know, my mother died this summer and I'm still not over it. That's the kind of example where you just say, oh, honey, I am so sorry. You are never going to get over that. What you are going to do is be able to figure out how to keep going. But there's a gigantic hole in your life, and your job is going to be to walk around that hole. I used to feel very sort of guilt-ridden about about every letter, even the girls who would write me for the 10th time. I loved your last advice. Here's my new problem.
Yeah.
And then one day I did go into one of my publishers and I saw that there were letters on the bulletin board to authors who were long dead. So I still do my best, but there will always be letters because girls, the heart of a girl is the heart of a girl. That is not going to suddenly be different in 2050. So girls are always going to have these wonderful bruisable hearts, boys and women and men too. And they're always going to have questions. And some of those questions they're going to be ashamed about and not want to ask their best friend. Maybe they have a crush on their best friend's boyfriend or brother or husband if everybody's older.
So or best friend.
Yeah, or best friend, exactly. So you, oh man, that's changed too. Mm-hmm. A lot of, so it's always nice to write to somebody anonymous. And that is why in Speed of Life, the main character, Sophia, reaches out to Dear Kate, loosely based on me, Dear Carol. And what's safe and fabulous for the protagonist is that she can ask her questions to somebody who's utterly anonymous.
Another thing about Sophia is that she's very sophisticated in a way. She lives in New York City. She's, you know, middle class in New York City, which is good. And goes to a private school and that kind of a thing and is exposed to a lot of different things.
Correct. And she's also, her mom dies 8 months before the book begins. And at that point, her best friends think she should be, they've been really there for her. They've been wonderfully supportive, but they're all eighth graders. So now they think Sophia should be just kind of ready to have fun again. And of course, Sophia's not ready. She cannot recharge herself like a cell phone. But I liked that the character is half Spanish. She's very attached to her abuelo who lives in Spain. But she's a girl who's bilingual without even thinking about it. When I visit schools, and I do a lot, sometimes I'll visit pro bono school and I'll say in Spanish, you know, hay alguien aquí que habla español. I'll sort of suddenly speak Spanish to the kids and they'll raise their hands and be excited. And I'll tell them how lucky they are to already be bilingual. Because I think 10-year-olds and 8-year-olds and 12-year-olds don't get that message. They, especially now in this country, I just want them to know they already have this incredible skill, whatever language they also speak.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to point that out to them.
We are talking today with Carol Weston, author of the new book, Speed of Life. It's for tweens, but I'm going to ask her in a little while, what about their parents? What about, it's for tween girls, but what about tween boys? I mean, there's a lot of people that she writes about in this book, including loosely, as she described, loosely based, a character loosely based on her own life. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can check out our Facebook page, too. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Carol Weston's day job for 30 years has revolved around the trials and tribulations of the readers of Girls Life magazine, where she is the advice columnist. That scenario is part of the plot of her new novel about adolescent girl angst. The book, entitled Speed of Life, is narrated by a 14-year-old still struggling with the death several months ago of her beloved mother. We're talking about the issues of adolescent girlhood today with Carol Weston. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. One of the things I like about the book, I'm reading it, I'm about halfway through, I'm not going to do any spoilers, so don't worry, people, but you give a lot of credibility to this demographic, the adolescent girl. You make her smart and depthful. A lot of times, there's just a lot of spaciness, a lot of people with, you know, people worry about how they speak, to using like too much. They focus on that kind of a thing, and you don't.
Thank you. I was a literature major. I care a lot about books and novels for kids and teens and adults. And look, anything that your kids are reading is great because the goal is for them to be readers. But I did work hard to make everybody very real. And actually, this book took me longer to write than any of my previous books. I really spent 10 years on this book. My Ave and Pip series came out during that 10 years. It's not as though every day I was working on Speed of Life, but it just kept kind of ripening. And now that it took this long, I'm glad that I gave it the time, because so often when if you're writing, leaving something alone and coming back at it so that you yourself are a fresh reader can really make a difference.
Margaret in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Margaret.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was listening to the program.
Sure.
And literally stopped in my tracks when I heard your guest share her version for the word mindfulness. And I would like some further understanding of that. I know that it can refer to a type of meditation practice, but I have worked with preteen and adolescent girls throughout my career as an educator and person working in recreation. Mm-hmm. And if anything, if we take that word for what it is, I think it is a great word for girls to consider and stop and think, what is this about? Why am I wanting this or going there, or mm-hmm. think I need to have this now?
Okay.
Et cetera, et cetera.
All right. Well, let's see what Carol wants to say. Okay, Margaret, thank you.
Actually, thank you for bringing that up, because sometimes I'll be on the radio and you say something and you almost want to press delete or fiddle around with it the way writers can do a lot of, half of my writing is rewriting. You know, you have the vision.
Absolutely.
And then you do the revisions for 10 years, as I just said. So thank you for calling my attention to that and giving me a chance to say it's not that I'm at all against mindfulness. I think the reason why I said what I said is because the word itself kind of came out probably for many people, it felt like out of the clear blue sky and was suddenly just so very used and, in my mind, a little bit overused. That said, I'm glad you're educating young people. They need all the help, and helping kids be in the moment, using their brains, taking their own pulse, being aware of their surroundings. In short, being mindful is absolutely important, even if I found that the word got a little bit overused.
Yeah, and as a writer, sometimes that's more of mind, something you're more mindful of.
Yes, that's true.
No,
that's
pun intended.
Exactly right.
Margaret, thanks a lot for that call. I appreciate it. Anybody else? 614-292-8513. In the book, Sophie had a great relationship with her mother, and I wondered about all the girls out there who can't share that. And I mean, that's something that's, to me, almost the linchpin of the whole story of Sophie, is that she did have that relationship.
Right. And in the book, among her challenges is going to be to build a better relationship with her father, because I won't spoil it either, but very early in the book where she says, where the dad says, we can talk, and she kind of has an interior monologue thinking, not really, no, we can't. And because her mother was Spanish, they literally had their own language. So she is a girl
mother raised her bilingual, right?
Right. So she's a girl who lost her mother, and in the full sense of the word. I think for some kids, if they lose a parent, the parent kind of immediately becomes a saint, and they might even have to struggle later to realize that that parent was, in fact, a real flesh and blood flawed person. But in Speed of Life, I just really wanted to, I guess because I've known in real life girls who've lost their mom. And as an adult, I thought, oh my gosh, that's just the worst. I mean, that's just horrendous. And then girls have written me losing a parent. And then my own dad died when I was 25. So I was not 14, but it was way too soon in my life. It happened. He died in a sleep of a heart attack. So
suddenly, Sophie's mom did.
Like, yeah. Sophie's mom. And, even now, if I walk in my door and there's a message on the phone, there was always maybe other people, they walk in, they see the message machine blinking and they're thinking, ooh, could be something good. But I just always have a little bit of a pang because I found out on the telephone. I think you don't get over that. You just figure out how to incorporate that kind of sadness in your life.
Nancy in Delaware, you're on the air. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I have a question, or I have a comment. I'm a grandmother now, and it's taken me all of my life. I still have to keep remembering that sometimes men and boys don't process emotions as quickly or as nimbly as we do. And you were talking a little bit ago about taking your time. This seems to me like an area I keep having to learn to take my time when I'm asking our sons or my husband to work with me on something that's got an emotional content to it. Maybe Carol would be willing to.
In other words, you want to snap your fingers and say, get with it. Understand what I'm saying and be what I need you to be.
Yeah, especially if I'm unhappy with them
for
something, right?
Okay, Carol Weston.
Well, first of all, I just want to say that some and I'm sure you agree, Nancy, you know, some boys are very sensitive and are very good with people and intuitive, and some girls are less so. But in general, especially if we're talking about young adolescents, then, yeah, girls are a little bit more aware, sometimes way too aware of everybody's feelings, and boys are sometimes just racing to the next place. If they can tell that you're unhappy, that's going to be difficult for them. So probably a reminder to try to be sure that you're praising them and showing them that you are happy with them and all that, because you don't want to kind of scare the 12-year-old off by if he's feeling like he's disappointed his grandmother. But and then try to find things that you both share. Sometimes that's hard, but are there TV programs or music or card games that you both like so that you're often on the same wavelength? My mother-in-law lives in Columbus, Ohio, and she's 92 years old, and she loves to play Hearts, so she's always playing with all of her grandkids, and it's the one place where they're very patient with her because we're all playing cards, and otherwise they might want to, they can walk more quickly than she can, but they can't play cards more quickly, so trying to find those places where you will both be on the same page.
Thanks a lot, Nancy. 614-292-8513 is the number to call if you have a question for my guest, Carol Weston, author of a new book, Speed of Life. Maybe you know her as the advice columnist for Girls Life magazine. Maybe you read her growing up. She's been around for 30 years now. So give us a call if you have recollections of Ask Carol. What do you do when you're stumped? Do you ever seek, well, you mentioned earlier that you do seek expert advice on certain issues, but are you ever stumped?
Sometimes I'll sit down and I'll read a letter and I'll think, well, I don't know. And then I'll sort of go away for 2 hours and come back with my Buddha head. I call it my Buddha head. And then I'm much in a better place for just answering. But I mean, I remember when I would read about kids cutting themselves years and years ago, and I thought, what is this? Because I read about it in my mail before it was kind of in the media. So sometimes somebody's girls confide in me about things that aren't yet the norm. Boy, when I first wrote Girl Talk in 1985, I remember anorexia and bulimia were new. AIDS was something we really did not understand. And that book has gone through four editions. But in the first edition, it was just a couple of paragraphs about this mysterious dreadful disease. So I keep up. I mean, if something's written about adolescence, I go ahead and read it. And I do consult psychologists or experts when I need to.
Janicius and Gahanna, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Ness. My question is, I heard you say that you talk a little bit about mindfulness in the book, and I was wondering if you talk anything or speak to any type of emotional intelligence. I know that young women or young males too but having a higher level of emotional intelligence can help with all kinds of trauma. So I'm wondering if you'd use any of that in the book.
Well, I mean, my new book is Speed of Life, and it's a novel. In some ways, my own career arc has been from Dear Abby to Judy Blume a little bit, although I still write the Dear Carol column at Girls Life magazine. So I don't speak about emotional intelligence in an academic way. It's more that I'm encouraging girls to be aware of other people's emotions, because, you know, a lot of 12-year-olds are acutely aware of their own emotions, but aren't aware that other people are going through all of their separate drama. So trying to teach people to be empathetic and to be caring, really, and to reach out and to realize that even if they reached out last week to somebody who went through something terrible, that person still might need some extra TLC this week.
Thanks a lot for that call. Appreciate it. Anybody else? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You've said that eighth grade is the sweet spot target audience for this book, Speed of Life, and I thought parents of eighth graders might like it too.
Well, thank you. When my own daughters, I have two daughters, were in eighth grade, I was in a book club with Lizzie and also a book club with Emmy and also a book club with my women's group. And every so often we'd pick a group, a book like Lord of the Flies that I could read with the kids and also with the adults. Uh-huh. But yes, if you would let me in, I would read the first page aloud.
Please do.
Because sometimes I think talking about a book, certainly when I'm in a bookstore, I like to just read the page and see what the voice mm-hmm. sounds like. So here goes. Warning, this is kind of a sad story. At least at first. So if you don't like sad stories, maybe you shouldn't read this. I mean, I'd understand if you put it down and watched cat videos instead. I like cat videos too. Then again, this book is already in your hands. It starts and ends on January 1st, and I was thinking of calling it The Year My Whole Life Changed, or Life, Death, and Kisses, or maybe even The Year I Grew Up. For me, being 14 was hard. Really hard. Childhood was a piece of cake. Being a kid in New York City and spending summers in Spain, that was all pretty perfect, looking back. But being 14 was like climbing a mountain in the rain, in flip-flops. I hoped I'd wind up in a different place, but I kept tripping and slipping and falling and wishing it weren't way too late to turn around. This book does have funny parts, and I learned two giant facts. Number one, everything can change in an instant, for worse, sure, but also for better. Number two, sometimes, if you just keep climbing, you get an amazing view. You see what's behind you and what's ahead of you and, the big surprise, what's inside you.
That is Carol Weston, author of Speed of Life, from which she just was reading. If you have a question or comment, Carol Weston is the Dear Carol of Girls Life magazine. She's been writing that column for 30 years, responding to letters from girls originally, now emails, I'm sure, sometimes maybe even texts. I don't know. Ages 9 to 15. You credit your now grown daughters with helping you stay in touch with girlhood. And I wonder who helps you now that they're entering their late 20s and they're not talking to girls.
No, they're not. Plus, they're really busy now.
Yeah.
The occupational hazard of being a daughter of a writer is they had to read my column, which helped me make sure they were au courant about everything, too. But I usually do like having interns help me. So often I'll have a college student, and yes, I do pay them, and they read my work and they talk to me about what things are going through. But in terms of staying up with actual sort of 12-year-olds, the mail itself keeps me, you know, their voices have always been in my head. And when I do visit schools, and here in Columbus, I visited CSG and Academy a couple of months ago, which was great fun. And I visited some public schools. And I think over the years, I visited Wellington, too. But whenever you visit a school, there's a little part of me secretly spying a little bit and just sort of soaking up the energy. And so I'm probably one of those adults who never quite let go of all of that. I mean, my first byline was 17 magazine when I was 19. So it's not as though I had to try to remember what it was like to be a kid. There's my inner child is 12 and is doing just fine.
Mona Lisa in Columbus. You're on the air. Hi.
Hi. Hi, Carol. And thanks for the program. And I just want to, you know, mention a little bit when you said about girls been, you know, cutting themselves a few years back. And how about a 12-year-old girl that, you know, not only keep in touch to themselves and just ignore everyone else. I do not know whether you noticed lately, because this happened to my daughter too right now. Kids now are more manipulative, and I think, I know it's kind of hard, it's a hard word, selfish. They're going up a step ahead instead of just cutting themselves. Now they are suicidal. They're using suicidal thought. In what my opinion is sort of like blackmailing their parents. And, you know, we're concerned about our kids, our daughters and everything, but it's really hard. And like you said, they don't keep in touch to others. They just tend to themselves. I don't know if you noticed that.
Well, yeah, I mean, that you said that that's not new. It's hard, that's one of the learning processes. But what about the is there a continuum here?
Well, I guess I wouldn't completely agree with you, Mona Lisa, because that would be really scary if we thought that kids were using suicidal thoughts to blackmail their parents. And let me quickly say that I know that you're not incorrect either. There are certainly kids who are manipulative, but even those manipulative kids are deeply unhappy, and we want to try to help them feel less troubled and less self-destructive and figure out how to be constructive. And it's very terribly hard for parents to navigate what to do when a child is talking about suicide. I get lots of letters from girls, too, saying, my friend is thinking about suicide. She doesn't want me to tell anybody. And, you know, that's not the kind of secret you have to keep. 13 Reasons Why was very controversial, and some people may have felt that it was productive, but others worried that it made it way too easy for people to talk about suicide in a way that was too casual. I think back in the olden days, I think that there were a lot of people our age who still thought that kids and teenagers were very selfish. In fact, I'm going to read something that Socrates wrote, okay? This is Socrates. Young people nowadays love luxury. They have bad manners. They show disrespect for old people, contradict their parents, gobble their food, and tyrannize their teachers. So I don't think it has ever been easy, but I think maybe it's true that right now it feels like it's harder than ever because the stakes feel very high for every kid. And when anybody talks about suicide, you have to pay attention. Even if you're thinking that they're doing it partly to be manipulative, you still have to pay attention.
Thanks, Mona Lisa, for that call. We're going to take a quick break right now. My guest is Carol Weston. She's author of the new book, Speed of Life. It's a novel about a 14-year-old growing up in New York and her struggles 8-9 months after her mother has suddenly died of an aneurysm, a brain aneurysm. If you have a question or comment for Carol Weston, she is also the Dear Carol columnist, advice columnist for Girls Life magazine. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. I'm talking about the world of girls, their fears, their hopes, their dreams, and their realities with author and advice columnist Carol Weston. Carol has written the advice column for Girls Life magazine for 30 years. Her new novel is about a tween girl grieving after her mother's sudden death and struggling with all the usual obstacles of girlhood. The book is entitled Speed of Life. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Jim in Upper Arlington, you're on the air. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Ann. I'm listening to this, and I'd kind of like to add a little counterpoint to this, and this concerns young boys and men. You know, my problem is I was with the Boy Scouts for 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we, from the age of 11 to 18, we raised a lot of really good young men, young boys to be men.
Mm-hmm.
They're married. They have children. They have good careers. They're respectful of their marriages and their wives. And what I have noticed in the past 10 years since I've left is this rising crudity, vile attitude among young boys, young men. And I'm really concerned about how a young lady would navigate, you know, these problems when they're thrown into, you know, this conversation, into conversations with young men like today.
Well, you know, Carol Weston, you deal with that pretty specifically in Speed of Life. Go ahead.
You mean dealing...
As far as boys and what they're where they're coming from, and girls ask a lot you a lot of questions as an advice columnist, and you deal with that as well in the book.
Right. Well, and I kind of agree. Well, I 100% agree with you, Jim. I think there's a lot of crudeness out there, and it's gotten much more normalized in the last few months, and so it's harder to tell people not to use foul language or not to be bullies. And in Speed of Life, there's a love interest. It's not just a book about grief and 1 year in the life of a 14-year-old girl. And she meets a boy and he's not crude. So I think
she meets other boys who are.
And she meets other boys who are. Her first, yes, there's a boy in the book who's very full of himself and just sort of thinks he's kind of God's gift to ninth grade boys. And Sophia is not impressed, but she's confused because she's so young. She's not used to the attention. So she goes from having a crush on this boy named Miles to kind of wondering what the heck happened she's a girl who hasn't had her first kiss, and suddenly her first kiss is with this sort of gross guy, and she doesn't even know if it counts. And that's one of the examples of her writing to the advice columnist, who then calms her down and says it won't be her last kiss, and there are nicer, kinder, smarter boys out there. So thank you for all the work you did with the Boy Scouts, getting some good young men out
there.
Yeah,
I never read Girls' Life, but I was raised on Boys' Life. You know, we have Boys' Life for years. Jim, thanks a lot for that call. Martha in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Martha.
Hi. I just wanted to do a shout-out to Carol. I was the librarian at Columbus School for Girls for quite a few years and was lucky enough to host her many a time. And she is a wonderful, wonderful author and so appealed to our kids. She has a series. She's not talking about Diary of Melanie Martin. I don't know if they're still in print. Are they, Carol?
Oh, thank you so much. I so appreciate your shout out. The Diary of Melanie Martin is indeed in print. It came out in 2000, and you can still get it on Amazon. It's not in every store anymore, but that's the one about the 10-year-old girl who goes traveling around to Italy in one book, and then Holland and Spain, and then she stays home. And in Diary of Melanie Martin, she tells her little brother, Matt, to get lost. And then he does. Oh, no. But it's a kid's book. So spoiler alert, it all works out.
And by the way, you specifically have referred to librarians as people who can have a really huge impact on a child.
Oh, yes. And Martha, you and Beth Abramowitz also at CSG and all the librarians in Ohio whose names aren't coming to mind. Librarians are my heroes. I was not a huge reader when I was 10. I kept a diary myself, so I was kind of a writerly sort. But I really didn't start reading with a passion until I finally stumbled on Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And then I was wondering if there are other good books out there. And turns out there were. So really, I think the librarians are often the quiet heroes. They may be saying shh, but they're also opening everybody's minds.
Martha, thanks a lot for that call. Vicki in Delaware, you're on the air. Hi, Vicki.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. My question is about
I'm a grandmother, and I have many. I have several grandchildren, but the one that I'm thinking about today is 15, and she seems to have trouble connecting with friends. I mean, it's not that she's being bullied or that the girls are mean to her, but they have a friend group, as they call it, and they have gatherings and parties and chat groups, and they don't include my granddaughter. So they're friendly to her at the lunch table, and she thinks they're her friends, and yet they don't include her, and I watch her be lonely and sad, and of course I feel terrible, and I'm just wondering what can the adults, grandparents, parents do to help kids through, probably some of this is very normal stuff, but what can we do? Because I keep saying to myself, I really can't do anything except be a listener.
Right. Well, the good news is this is pretty normal. I mean, and she's 15 and it's almost summertime. So instead of feeling like she's kind of on the outs with this group, summer, it's all bets are off, and she can find somebody who's 14 or 16. It's not so much just those classes. I also hope that when school starts again, she'll remember that it's really important to kind of make a friend or two friends, but trying to get into a group that's not quite letting you in, that's just really a waste of time and doesn't feel good. So if I were she, and it is hard, you're asking, how can you, the grandmother, help? Get her my book, Girl Talk. Mm-hmm. I think helping her realize that it's not so much that, I mean, you remember high school. If a group didn't let you in, they weren't going to suddenly open the doors. But she could maybe go to an amusement park this summer and be allowed to invite one friend. She can develop, work on, you know, the friendship. Maybe there's a neighbor that during the school year she doesn't hang out with much. Maybe there's somebody, or you can take her, you know, on a weekend away or so, or an aunt or an uncle can, and she can meet some other friends. Sometimes at age 15, it's suddenly meeting a guy, and things don't have to get too fast, but her self-confidence will soar if there's some guy in another town when you're both at the beach or whatever who thinks she's cute, and they hang out a little bit. In other words, things can change on a dime right now.
The speed of life.
And in the speed of life, thank you, the speed of life. Wow, yes, thank you. Speed of life is about a 14-year-old girl who 1 year later at 15, her whole life, she's just in so much of a different place. And when she meets Sam, she's just surprised he's, you know, people are even talking to her because she's used to feeling invisible. And of course, she's also grieving, but she comes into her own, and it's just month by month. It's gradual. But this year, Vicky, is the year that's going to be her turnaround year. Maybe even, you know, new haircut, new clothes, some of that superficial stuff can help too, so that she starts redefining herself. While I'm mentioning speed of life, I want to say that I did go to the Barnes & Noble in Lenox and signed some copies there, and also the beautiful new independent bookstore Gramercy in Bexley will have some signed copies, but the book is available in bookstores in general.
You know, you talk, Vicky in Delaware, thanks a lot for that call. It's a great question. How can they help? You do talk about a little bit in the book, Speed of Life, at least I picked up on it, the idea of summer as a reset period.
Oh, I love how you just said that. It is exactly. It's a reset period. Or if I said that, I love the way I said it. But that's exactly right. Because summer, especially if you've been banging your knuckles on a door that's not opening, well, let's just notice that there are other doors out there. Maybe she can volunteer, or just listeners in general, you know, you can be a volunteer, you can get a summer job, you can be scooping ice cream, but suddenly you notice that the world is not just these three kids and one boy who aren't paying attention the way you were hoping they would. Or for some kids, it's, you know, literally going to camp or going to, I think I was visiting my grandparents in Texas when I kind of went on my first date, which wasn't ideal particularly, but it was a cute boy paying attention to me. My goodness, I was 14.
You think of school as a haven for girls. How so?
Oh, well, it's a haven for girls who have terrible home lives, because I think what we sometimes forget is that some girls have terrible home lives. When I first wrote Girl Talk, I'd had a fairly happy childhood. It hadn't really occurred to me that there were girls who had alcoholic, abusive fathers and that incest was a real thing. And my gosh, when I wrote Girl Talk, the letters I got in the beginning when I wasn't used to getting such letters, it was just astounding. I mean, I didn't realize, I've always wanted to be a writer with a capital W. I hadn't really realized that I was sort of wading into to social work, which I have great admiration for, but didn't think I had the chops for. And yet suddenly you get terrible letters. So for some girls, going to school is just this safe place with teachers and librarians who are looking out for them. And I think I just like to remind people that you would never know what somebody's home life is. You hope it's wonderful, but it might be absolutely dreadful. And those are the hardest letters to answer, too. If somebody writes me and says, you know, my dad's beating me up or my brother's beating me up, it's not a quick, easy answer. And it's not for sure that calling 911 will make everything better in a hurry. It's just a lot of girls have a lot to navigate.
What kind of advice do you give them when you do get those letters?
I do try to help them figure out if there's somebody nearby whom they trust. Maybe it is the teacher, the librarian, the clergy person. Not everybody's trustworthy, but often there is somebody. Maybe it's a best friend's parent who can have a closer look and help. Because it's hard for me as the anonymous faraway person to assess, is this really horrendous abuse or was this a mom who, you know, flew off the handle? It's like when a kid says, I've lost 60 pounds. Well, you know, and my friends are upset with me. Well, was she 180 pounds and now she's 120 and good for her? Or is she anorexic? If she doesn't, you know, I can't tell. So I like to remind girls that there are people they can talk to and trust. And if I tell them that they can call 911, I go ahead and sort of warn them that this is a very big deal to call 911. But one of the first letters I ever got from this book was a girl who was pregnant, and it was her stepfather, and she had little sisters at home, so she was worried about them. And she hadn't talked to anybody. She wrote me that she hadn't talked to anybody to tell them what she told me. I think Girl Talk caught on because it was written in first person. So anyway, I mean, in that case, social workers helped her out and mm-hmm. her whole family kind of got exploded and was no longer a nuclear family. But some girls put up with more than they should. And of course, some girls are overly dramatic and are, you know, somehow have the upper hand. And families are complicated, and it's always hard to say kids today are different from kids yesterday because it's so, maybe I'm in the middle of the forest, so it's hard to see the trees.
You don't idolize the Dear Kate figure in your book. She isn't perfect, and she isn't the perfect mother, whatever that is. Have you felt that sort of pressure?
Oh, yeah, I did. I was so glad that my two daughters in high school didn't have some public, you know, terrible
didn't do some,
breakdown.
Like, mommy,
you know?
Dearest kind
right.
of
right. They were basically very, very different girls, very good kids. They weren't perfect any more than I was perfect, but they didn't, you know, they weren't the mean kid. Whereas dear Kate, I gave her a daughter whose name is Alexa, and she was a very fun character to write because she's got a lot of attitude, and she doesn't want her own world to change very much. As it happened, dear Kate's first husband ends up coming out, and she and the marriage ends. So dear Kate, unlike me, is divorced and has a very good relationship with her ex, whose name is Brian, and his partner is also named Brian. So they're the Bryans. But Alexa's got a lot that she's got to deal with, and dear Kate, it's not that easy for dear Kate to just go get through her days either.
Well, Carol Weston, thanks for spending part of your day with us. I appreciate your time.
It was such a pleasure, Anne. Thank you very much.
Carol Weston is author of the new book, Speed of Life. She's also, for 30 years now, the advice columnist, the Dear Carol in Girl's Life. Thanks a lot to the AllSides staff. Michael DeBonis is my producer. Shyla Knott is our assistant producer. Our AllSides interns, Kelly Rudolph, Kyle McKinnon, Aaron McKinnon, Aaron Kinkley and Owen Doherty, with video production by Rich Blue and Amber Blue. Alan DeCenzo is the composer of our theme music. Thanks a lot for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.